The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of Impromafia. Meaning, if you've got a problem, email Dan, not Wade.
Impromafia presents And Time!
Welcome to part 3, or part 2, or part 4, or part 1, depending on how I edit it together. I'm here with Patty Styles from Impro Melbourne.
Hello.
Hello, Patty.
I'm part 4, or 3, or 2, or 1. Could I be part 2 and a half?
Oh, well, look, it's my podcast. I can do whatever I want.
Excellent.
I'll do that for you.
Pod me.
Now, you've come from Impro Melbourne.
Yes.
You've been down there a while now.
Yep. I've been there 7 years.
Seven?
Seven.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. It's hard to believe 7 years have gone by so quick.
And where did you come from before that?
In impro terms, I trained in Calgary at the Loose Moose Theatre Company. Then I spent a year in Toronto.
Toronto, yep.
With Toronto Theatre Sports. At the time, it was called Dream Kitchen Theatre. It's not called that anymore. And then I went to Edmonton, which is 3 hours north of Calgary, and worked with Rapid Fire Theatre. Mm-hmm. I was the artistic director there. For
Listeners, you can follow along on the attached map.
Yes, I'm sorry I don't have the little bouncy ball on a map for you. And also worked with a company called Dynasty, the live improvised soap opera group, which is quite well known and an amazing, amazing cast of people.
It's so fascinating that in scenes we're told not to make gags and not to do horrible puns, and yet so many names of companies and shows are horrible puns.
Well, I never say to my players, don't make horrible puns, and I don't say don't gag. It depends on how you define a gag.
Yeah.
Because for me, a gag is, it's something funny at the sacrifice of the story, which can end a story, which sometimes can be good. So we don't go out there to gag because we're trying to tell stories. But if the story's going nowhere or it's time for the scene to end, then a gag can be useful.
We've got a little loophole here. We call that a tag.
Ah,
it's
yes.
It's an out. Oh, no, no, no. That's a good one. But it's not a gag. It's a tag.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, yeah, and that's why, because a lot of companies define gags differently. So some people go, oh, that's a great gag. And people go, we don't gag. And they're probably saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And they kind of look at each other weird and go, what?
Despite all the impro sort of going back and back to theatre sports being created and all certain games.
The caveman days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
can I get an offer from the, what's the geographic location?
Here.
Excellent. Okay, let's do a scene. Boom, boom. But despite all these books developed to sort of create this thing, the terminology keeps jumping all over the place, and you end up meeting another group, and they're like, oh, you know, there's a deny, and then there's a exposition, and, you know.
Well, it depends
on... Oh, it's a block, and...
Yeah, it depends on where people start their impro journey, so whose philosophy or work they're working from. If you're working from Johnstone, then there's terminology that you'll pick up from there, which will be in contrast or in complement to what you might learn through Del Close's work and Viola Spolin's. And then, of course, you get people who have worked with them that are also creating their own work. So I have a term, I say, you know, you gifting yourself, which is just when you're creating a platform or when you're being detailed with either your space work or your description of something, you're gifting yourself. You're offering yourself, and then you have those gifts that you can use later in the scene. I've never heard Keith use the term gifting, so if people have taken workshops with me, even though I'm very Johnstonian, they might pick up that term gifting and then think it's a Keith term, but it's, you know, so stuff just morphs as it develops and travels the world.
That's Keith Johnston.
Yes.
The great vampire.
I'm not going to comment on that.
I'm just very fond of, like, keeping that rumor alive.
Yes, yes. Well, he has written a vampire play.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, a play called They Come By Night, which was one of the first of Keith's plays that I did at Loose Moose. And I had to be a schoolboy vampire. All the vampires were girls, and we had to be boys in little school pants. We got to slither around under the audience and bite their ankles.
Oh, my. It sounds like such a... The stuff that he does seems like so electric and just
completely.
Full of madness.
It is. People go to theater and they can sit and watch incredible stories. They can go to Othello and watch Othello strangle Desdemona, knowing she's innocent, knowing the turmoil that he's going through in the heartbreak.
Yeah.
And not feel anything. Not be moved.
Oh, yeah.
Not be angry. Not want to yell out. Not want to just... They just watch because it's theater. But theater should be about challenge and emotion and experience. It should be an event, and it often isn't. It's dry, boring, watching live TV in a way. You know, it doesn't affect you. You can go, it's pretendy land. And it is pretendy land, but we get to explore stories and situations through that safety of Pretendyland, but it should still have impact. So Keith's work had that. It would be, when you came into the Loose Moose, be it for the kids show or a scripted play or an improv show, it was an experience. For the children's theater productions, we'd have kids up on stage. Any point of moral decision, we would ask the kids. We didn't ask them, oh, hello, my name is Little Red. What color coat should I wear? Yeah, whatever. You say to them, wow, here's this, you know, wolf in the woods and he knows my name. Do I talk to him? Half the kids are going to say no because they know the story. Half the kids are going to say yes because they want you to be in trouble. But you get to have that experience with them. And where do parents get to take their kids and let them yell?
Mm.
Where it's encouraged for them to talk. And it was the same for adult plays. For Mutiny on the Bounty, we'd give the front row of the audience water guns, water pistols. So when, in the story of the Bounty, when it goes around the Cape and it hits that big storm, we'd come out with a sign going, use guns now. So the actors are on stage moving back and forth as if the ship is in huge waves, and the audience is going nuts, squirting us with these water pistols, having the time of their life. Where do you get to go to theater and you're given a water pistol to shoot the actors?
That is fun.
It is fun. It's an experience. They leave. Mm. Those people who did that in that show, I'm sure, will still talk about it or remember it.
Mm. And the funny thing is that when we learn impro in Brisbane, you go to an impro workshop and they teach you how to do impro, and it's like structured rules and stuff. And then you find out once you've got that, it's just anywhere.
It's not, well, Keith says there are no rules.
Yep.
There are no rules.
Mm-hmm.
What we have is terminology that we can learn from. That terminology was devised, and the games were devised to help unlock the human fear, the things that we do naturally to prevent ourselves from being at risk. But if you're going to be on stage creating these stories and allowing yourself to go into that world, there is an element of risk and there is an element of failure. You can't control that. You can't perfect that. What you can do is learn to enjoy it, to remove the fear, to embrace the experience of it. And that's why we have the terminology to move people out of performing through fear into performing through impulse. But once you have that in you, once you're not performing to control or protect, then you can block each other because you're getting to a deeper story.
Mm.
You can flip ideas and scenes. You can alter someone's offer, because then what you're craving is a story you've never been in, a world you've never been in, the experience for the audience. But you need to be in that place of no fear to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why, I mean, Keith confuses a lot of people because he's got all this terminology and then he says there's no rules. People go, but it's also human impulse to go, we now have rules. We will now take these rules and this is the way we will improvise. And if we do these things right, then we are good improvisers.
And if we follow the rules, we'll be safe.
Exactly. And then you go, you're not getting it. You're not getting it. And I've heard people, you know, in note sessions go, well, we've broken four rules tonight. And you go, what? Wait.
Yikes.
Wait. Oh, and just so, it can also be a device for directors or teachers who are not skilled in the philosophy of the work. It's a way for them to prove that they have knowledge and to control the students or their team. And it's not even a conscious thing, I don't think, that I will control you with this. They're trying to get to something, but because they don't know what it is they're getting to, all they've got is this set of stuff on paper. Yeah. Wow, that was a rant. I think I've podcast 7, 8, and 9 now.
Now, you were telling me the other day, some of Keith's ideas are really quite out there, and people have to step in and go, well, you can't really do that. Well, what were some of the things that he asked for that you couldn't provide, and what were some of the things that you did actually manage to provide?
Keith works from, I mean, and this is my experience and my observation. It's not me in his head speaking his words. It's my experience of working with
That's
him.
That's all right. I called him a vampire before. Yeah. You don't need a disclaimer.
No, I just think it's fair because sometimes when you've worked closely with Keith, when you share your experience of Keith, people sometimes think you're talking for Keith.
Ah, right.
Keith talks for Keith. It's not my place to talk for Keith. If I talked for Keith, you know, I'd have how many books and be doing other things. You know, I get to enjoy what Keith comes up with.
Yep.
As a co-creator of his at the Loose Moose, a student of his, member of the company, whenever you did a Keith play, you didn't know what you were in for. All you knew is that you would be challenged and it would be great and something would, magical would appear. So when we did Mutiny on the Bounty, all the curtains were stripped from the theater. There was rigging from the ceiling to the ground.
Oh, nice.
There was trap doors on the stage and backstage. So when you had the opening image of the ship and the sailors on the ship, you had people going across catwalks, down rigging, down through pits, up through pits, around the back. And it looked like a working vessel.
Oh, nice.
It was great. Absolutely great. And all of that stuff would also be useful in theater sports. We had a swing that could be lowered, so you could be swinging on that stage. Nice.
See, I've talked to Wade about getting a swing, and he said, oh, we'd have to pay for a rigger, and we'd have to get all this stuff. I'm like, oh, stupid health and safety.
I know. Well, it is. And, you know, Keith is...
I want to hurt myself doing improv.
Well, it's also the experience. How can we as improvisers be following Inspire Your Partner and have directors that are not giving us stuff to inspire? So Keith would go, let's have a swing. That'd be fun. Yeah, it was fun. Let's have trapdoors. Yeah! You know, he kept giving the children toys.
We actually have a trapdoor at the Arts Theatre, but it's been painted over about 12 times.
Oh, trapdoors are great. One of the things that Keith asked for when we were doing Mutiny on the Bounty, the doctor on the Bounty was an alcoholic.
Yep.
So in showing the doctor's alcoholic stage, Keith wanted to have the doctor going through hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
So wanted to have, you know, creatures coming up and that sort of thing. Am I getting my plays right? Am I talking about Watson or am I talking about Bounty? Ooh, there's something for you. My brain's melding stories. Anyway, there was a doctor.
Yes.
He was hallucinating. Yep. That we know is true. And Keith wanted an octopus. Can we have an octopus coming up through? And everybody was like, no, Keith, we can't have an octopus. Why not? Can we just... No, Keith. Well, can we have tentacles on poles and you can stick it up through the trap door? Which is what we ended up having, was these tentacles coming up. So the doctor had this vision, you know. But for Keith, it's not... It's not extraordinary to ask for that because it's what's needed in the story. And if you don't ask, you're never going to get it.
Yeah.
So let's just ask. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. He would often do that in rehearsal. Go, how about this? How about this? How about this? How about this? In his way. That's my... He doesn't speak that fast. But... And people go, oh, Keith. Oh, Keith.
I can just imagine him trying to work with Wade. Wade would end up balled up in the fetal position.
Well, the other thing, too, is by the time I got to Les Mis, there was a whole generation of people who had worked with Keith.
Yeah.
You know, the founders of Les Mis and the original theater sports players, Dennis Cahill and Tony Totino and Frank Totino and Jim Curry and Vina Sood and Kathleen Foreman and Clem Martini and just... Well,
and can I just say, Natalie, you've just been out name dropped.
I don't know what that means, but I'm sorry, I've taken your crown. you know, these are people that, you know, Rick Hilton and Dave Duncan, people that... often don't get their due of the work that they created. And they made the Les Mis Theater. They were in there painting it and fixing it, and very much the Little Rascals, let's put on a play, Daddy's got a bar and I've got a bed sheet.
Now it's time for a montage.
Yes. But because they worked so closely with Keith for so many years, by the time I got there, he was never treated like a guru or master around Les Mis. If anything, he was just, you know, the crazy guy that would always show up with a paper bag with boxes of tissues in it. And odd pieces of script. He was just one of the gang. Yeah. And in notes or in brainstorming or in rehearsal, everybody contributed. We weren't led blindly by the guru. And he hates that term. You know, so if Keith said, how about this? Dennis would go, Keith, shut up. All right. You know, it was shared.
Oh, okay. That sounds more like our group dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. And you need that, I think, in an improv group. You can't...
Or at least I know. I certainly recall being told to shut up many times. Yeah. Maybe I'm the guru.
If you're told... Yeah. Who's told to shut up the most? Let's play Who's the Guru? I don't think improv companies work well with too much status in the group. I mean, I don't think improv groups work well as a full democracy, and they don't work well as a full dictatorship. It's a really delicate balance of having someone who can lead, but without the group having any responsibility for direction, and someone who can inspire, but also gets inspired by the group. Like, it's interesting.
So you were actually out here in 88 for the bicentennial, as was I.
Expo.
As a keen 11-year-old, I think.
Oh, my God.
So were you doing that in the Canadian?
Yeah, I played on the Les Mis team. Expo 88 had this huge international theater sports tournament.
Oh, okay.
And it was phenomenal. It was great. We had had one in February in Calgary for the Olympics.
Yep.
Because the Olympics also happened. And that was the first theater sports tournament that I had been to or a part of that included people outside of North America. Mm-hmm. And that was phenomenal. We had a team from Denmark and a team from Melbourne.
Yep.
Russell Fletcher was there on that team. And then in July, Expo 88 was happening, and I got to play on the Loose Moose team, which was just such a huge honor for me. When I was asked to play, I could not believe I was being asked to play on the team with these guys. And it was Dennis Cahill, Tony Totino, Harold Pruse, and myself. And it was an amazing event. It was just so many great improvisers from all over the world. But it was also a very interesting time for us as the Loose Moose team, because it was the first time we went somewhere else and theater sports was played completely different than how we played it. And here's Dennis, who was with Keith at the university, who started, you know, working on theater sports in Calgary, suddenly going, this is a show I don't know. But wasn't I around when it started? Same with Tony. So it was a really interesting awakening.
All right. So what specific elements of the had we gotten wrong?
Look, wrong's a harsh term.
Well, yeah. As we've just come out of a quarter of an hour saying, there are no rules.
Yes, yeah.
But I mean, ones did we get wrong anyway?
It was a different approach, producing a different product. The differences in the style of show, in a Loose Moose theater sports show, the show would often start off with a 10-minute game, which would be for the newer players to be on stage and get a chance to perform. Then we'd go into what we call our free improv section, which was a bit of a demonstration section. Not so much teachy, but, you know, a little bit of doing games or exercises that you don't normally get a chance to do. Sometimes we'd do mask work or other stuff. Then we'd do a Danish game where the audience would judge. And then we do our second half challenge match.
Yep.
We only played with two teams competing, never 4 to 6 teams. And we didn't have all the time challenges. We didn't have the 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute board. We didn't have 6 teams competing with eliminations. All of that was just not a part of our world. For us, it was the job of the performers to create the pace in the show, because it's never been competition.
Mm-hmm.
Theater sports is not really competition. Mm-hmm. We're theatrically creating the elements of competition to move the audience.
Yeah.
So when we play, when we would be playing the match, if the other team just did a 4 minute epic scene with the whole audience involved, then we go, okay, well, we would counter that with maybe a very quick word at a time story. So you get variety in the pacing of the show, but it was our job to be watching and creating that team on team.
Well, when I started out, I found that we were doing this is the 1 minute round, this is the 2 minute round. It was very structured, and because there was the 4 team element, and if you didn't win, you didn't get to play in the final, you tended not to jump up on stage and help other people out, or you didn't want to jump up and accidentally ruin their scene.
Yeah, there's more
and
competition.
Knock them out of the competition. You had to be really careful that if they did a song game, that you didn't double up on a song game, or they did a gibberish game, you didn't do something similar. And so you weren't listening to what they were doing and thinking about helping them in their scene. You were thinking about making sure that your scene worked well next, and whether you were up next. And
Yeah, exactly. And when people are performing, they want to perform. So if you have something to strive towards, be it more stage time or playing the following week or, you know, money, then it does start altering the player's point of view, because the players start performing to survive and produce.
And no one wants to do that. No one wants to be that desperate to win. They want to be cool with it, but then when you've got that thing in the back of your brain going, I could really do with that extra $40.
Yeah, exactly. And look, the style of show that was created in Australia and performed in Australia, hugely successful. You know, it was hugely successful.
Yeah, well, it was on TV at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it obviously struck a nerve and hit something quite powerful with the performers that were doing it and the audience that was watching it. So regardless of what work I personally like to do, I have to recognize that when we were performing in the round in this massive concert hall. I mean, it was just extraordinary, the amount of people coming to see the show. But yeah, I think if you're playing with some sort of end goal, and the end goal isn't the show, it's something about self, it's going to change how you perform.
Mm. I remember here we had a big statue for the end of year Burbrook Cup.
Mm.
So this statue was like 2 meters tall, and it had smaller statues on it, stuck all the way up, which was great because it was so visible for the audience. But of course, there was plenty of space for little plaques to show who'd won progressively in 89, 90, 91. And so people would go, oh, look, there's my name on a trophy.
Yeah.
We had a mailing list here for a while until it caught fire and burnt down. And I naively said, well, if it just doesn't matter, what we should do is take that beautiful big statue and burn it and then put it in a little tiny statue and call it the ashes of Brisbane theatre sports. And that way, people's names wouldn't get sort of locked there for eternity. It'd be like this transient thing, like the beauty that is impro. Yeah. I got shouted down with a caps lock email.
Yeah. Well, there's
told I didn't get it.
Wow. Look, humans, we have a lot of ego. We do. We have a lot of ego. We fear not leaving an impact in the world. So it plays into all of that. Mm. It does. Of course it does. But for me, the joy of the experience is the audience's response. The joy of playing is looking into my partner's eyes and seeing them lit up, seeing them go into a different world or place or character. To have other people do that to me, you know, where you're on stage and it's absolute limitless possibility with this incredible sensation of fear and excitement mixed together. You know, it's just this beautiful place of nothingness and everything all at once. It's that pure creative hit. That's what I love and that's what I crave. And it's not going to come if there's any end objective on it.
Well, I feel very validated now. Take that theatre sports mailing list from the late 90s.
Ooh, I'm doing awful things. I'm removing people's name-dropping crowns.
Thank you very much for having this interview with me, Pat. Pleasure. It's been an absolute delight to watch you all weekend and to be able to drag you aside to do this. Now,
do you take the shackles off now?
Yes, here's the key.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you are with Impro Melbourne, which is impromelbourne.com.au.
That's correct.
Track them down if you're ever in Melbourne or if you're listening from Melbourne right now. Now, are there any other web things that you'd want to point out to them that you do?
Like through Impro Melbourne or just web things?
Anything that otherwise.
Do
you have your own website? A blog?
Do I? I should. I will at some point.
Now, I represent Civic Net Web Design, and we do web design.
Well,
so
we need to chat, I think, because I'm still trying to figure out the emoticon thing, so I'm way behind. I'm hopeless. No, the Impro Melbourne site lists everything that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of links off the Impro Melbourne site for other groups that I mentioned, the Rapid Fire Theatre Company in Edmonton and Dynast, as well as the Lismus Theatre. If you like surfing websites, always good to check them out.
Yep.
There's different impro schools. The Lismus Theatre has a summer school that they do. Keith Johnstone does a 10-day workshop with him in Calgary. Bay Area Theatre Sports in San Francisco also does a fantastic international summer school. So those are great places to check if you're an improviser and you want more experience. And we have a newsletter, so if you want to get Impro Melbourne news and tidbits and stuff, you can sign up off our website.
Hattie Styles, thank you very much.
Pleasure, thank you.
This is part 4 of the Off the Cuff special, and we're talking to Rebecca de Unamono.
Hello!
Welcome from Sydney. You're from Sydney.
I am from Sydney, yes. I apologise.
I think we love Sydney people.
Oh, do you? Oh, good.
Yeah, not that there's fucking Perth people.
I don't want them around. They live too far away.
All right. Well, this is the dessert end of the podcast.
Excellent.
And we've been neck deep in impro theory all the way through. So Rebecca's with us just to talk about some particular story elements from what's been happening in Impro Sydney or even Impro Melbourne or anywhere around the world.
Excellent, excellent. Oh, stories, I tell you what. There are a few, so if you just hit me with any questions, and I'm sure there's a story attached.
Well, my favourite is when I first came to Impro in Brisbane, I kept hearing these stories about a guy named Mark Buckingham and the water wars, where people went crazy every summer with water guns, like ambushing each other, middle of the night type shenanigans.
Right.
And apparently it culminated in a gigantic battle in the botanical gardens in the city with Mark Buckingham running around with not a lot of... Well, he was nude.
Oh, he was nude. Nude water sports, my favourite.
Nude and a gun.
What does that say?
It says someone call the police, which they did eventually, they were actually talking to one of the other people playing. This seems to have happened. Are you familiar? And Colin Smith was in there. No, I've never. I'm not familiar. We haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And Mark, who's now got clothes on again, is whispering to someone else,
Wow, Colin really is a good actor.
Oh, so that was a bunch of improvisers doing that? Yeah. Look, often I like the nudity that's going to occur between improvisers to preferably be on stage.
No,
if it's going to happen, why not? Be brave, risky. And in fact, directed the Theatre Sports Nationals
you
this year.
You could probably back off that mic.
Okay, I'm backing off the mic.
Oh, and my ears have stopped bleeding.
Oh,
that's
sorry,
awesome.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I directed the Theatre Sports Nationals this year, and I set up a scene called a player fantasy scene, where the team can play any scene they've always wanted to play at the Emerald Theatre, which is like a 1,500-seater in Sydney.
Wow.
So the teams come armed with, you know, an idea, but basically where it takes place and what happens in the scene is all improvised based on Lewis's suggestions. And in fact, Queensland was represented by Tom Dunstan, who I know that you're familiar with, and he did a scene in which he stripped off. And the whole idea was it's very much like an Austin Powers scene where there's always, like, objects somehow being placed in front of him so that he's constantly concealed. And all the other players joined in to keep him hidden, and it was hilarious. Mm. Especially when there was just a little bit of a glimpse of a buttock, I think you would think it was, and the audience went nuts. So, yeah, that's a bit of a nuding on stage story that has happened. I haven't seen many. Mm. No, I haven't seen many, but... at Belvoir Street Theatre, 1 year, David Callan and Adam Spencer decided to... It was a Greek scene, a tragic Greek tragedy scene, and they decided to come across on what we used to call Beren's Leap, because Beren was an improviser who leapt off this area at Belvoir quite often. And
that sounds like our Mike trap.
Yeah, right.
Where Mike got trapped and was in a cast for a couple of months.
Oh, gosh. Well, this was dangerous for other reasons, because it was the... we were told that the moon's passed or something, and so, of course, David and Adam stripped off completely naked and passed with their backs to the audience as the moons that went across, and some were going, "Oh, look, quite impressed. That's quite a nice bottom." So that was another nude moment on stage. Very good, very fun. But I myself know always fully clothed.
I wish I could claim that.
Oh, you've nuded up?
Not totally. I've always been ready to.
Yeah.
But so far, I've only been called to be in my underpants on stage. Okay. So, and whenever I'm preparing for a show, I always wear the good underpants.
Oh, yeah, because you never know.
It's impro, and who knows what's going to happen.
Very, very true, yes.
Hide the tattoos.
Very, very true. So, yes, no, that's some nude stories.
Mm. We used to drink very heavily up here in Brisbane, because on every second Tuesday night at a pub we were working at, we had Lions Night, and the manager loved us, and so he had to clean the lines of beer out. So instead of just washing it all down the sink, we'd have a dozen pitchers of beer.
Fantastic.
And people got used to taking half days or full days off on a Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were like, oh, then obviously must be sick, because people would take it off on a Monday or a Friday otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, we were getting hammered on a Tuesday night.
I like it.
And now it's like we're all grown up, and we don't...
It's very hard to back up.
A couple of drinks here and there. But then you guys come up to the festival and we're like, oh, Jesus.
I think improvisers have an amazing ability to drink. And I think it's just because those that improvise tend to be incredibly social people that like people. And so when you get a whole bunch of people who like people together, it's inevitable that you're going to have a party and you're going to have a good time. The alcohol, you know, helps that. And also that, you know, particularly when you haven't seen improvisers for a while from, you know, interstate or overseas or whatever, and getting together with them, it's always we've got to make the most of this, you know. It's a festival. We're doing what we love, and we need
we'll recover next week.
Exactly right. Talk to the liver later, but now this is really, really fun. So drinking seems to be part of the deal. I think it comes with the territory.
Had there been any injuries sustained in the, sort of the culture?
Injuries? Drinking? Injuries?
Well, in general. In general. I know that Brad Daniels from Edge Impro, just before I turned up on the scene, was doing juggling and fire twirling stuff, and he finally, like, took it on board to do a bit of a flame throwing with his mouth.
Oh,
what was that called? Fire blowing. Fire blowing. And so he's got the mixture, and he's had a go and gone. And everyone's gone, wow, that was awesome. Brad, your hair's on fire.
Oh, no.
And he's like, oh, what? And he's just, and the whole thing's gone up, and he's rolling around on the dirt trying to put it out. Oh. And he was basically bald for a month.
Oh, goodness.
He's like the doctor. And the doctor's like, oh, so how did this happen? And Brad's like, oh, I was doing fire blowing. And the doctor's like, oh, that's really interesting. How do you do that? And Brad's like, I'm in a lot of pain.
Yeah, no need to talk about the ins and outs of it, please. Yeah, well, actually, this year with Impro Melbourne, I was very lucky to be their celebrity theatre sports, which is always great fun. And Rick Brown, who's here up at the festival at the moment, he did a scene, and it was a childbirthing scene, and it was a genre roller coaster. So going from one genre to the next while sustaining the same story. And he was playing the doctor. And it was then called The Birth Occurred, and it was then called Slapstick, or Keystone Cops, I think was the genre called. And he made a brilliant transition, just went, you know, who left this afterbirth here? Whoa! And did this, like, pratfall slip on the afterbirth. And everyone loved it, because it was just in a split second he changed. It was brilliant. Audience goes nuts. We're all like, yeah. We're all watching the scene going on. And then the scene ended. Judges scored the scene. MC came back on. Chat. Now I eventually turned to some of the guys in my team and I said, oh, where's Rick? Where is he? And we kind of went, I don't know. And slowly but surely the news trickled down onto the stage and throughout the cast that he had broken his wrist in the pratfall, and that the ambulance was on its way, and that he was in a hell of a lot of pain. And the poor guy, he ended up having to get, like, pins put in his wrist and everything. And he's got this scar now, this war wound of impro. And that was commitment to a... definitely commitment to a scene. I myself probably don't commit that much. I've not sustained an injury myself, but that was pretty nasty. That's the nastiest one I've seen.
I used to, when I was young and fit, whenever it was like hit the ground, I was like bang to the knees and bang to the floor.
Ooh, yeah.
And then at one point I suddenly went, oh God, I'm old. And so now,
weary. And so now
I just kind of like clasp my heart and then walk off stage. Yeah. Oh, I am dead. I know. I am slain.
That's the thing. I tell you what, age catches up with you. Yeah. Oh, particularly with the drinking. Hello.
I was quite happy that the only time I had to fall over the other night, it was in super slow motion and I just kind of gently lay down on the floor.
Yes, anything that requires anything like that. Yes, slow motion is your friend when improvising. Correct.
A very similar thing happened to poor Mike, because there was a poorly marked part of the stage. He jumped out off the stage, misjudged, and went. And his ankle was sort of out of action for a month or so. Luckily, his mum was in the audience.
Good.
So, which didn't make it seem quite so pathetic when he lay there screaming, Mum!
No, poor guy.
No, I missed that. Yeah. Actually, so.
Oh, see, no, it can I just be got very to see dangerous. The aftermath. It can be very dangerous.
But the mood of the, like, the audience was like, oh, God, we've just seen someone get injured. Yeah. And you're like, oh, how do we pick up the show from this point?
Exactly. Well, that was the same with us. It was very, oh, dear. Like, we're all concerned about Rick. But anyway, he's all right now. He survived. So it's all good. Yes.
Excellent. Any story that's like, you're like, oh, I know what I'm going to do.
Oh, God. Talk about improvising Jason Alexander.
George from Seinfeld.
Yes.
And the guy from I Don't Buy Kisses Anymore.
Oh, what's that?
It's a movie he did before Seinfeld.
Brilliant.
And
brilliant.
It's quite a charming little romantic comedy.
Excellent.
It's one of those kind of nerdy, geeky guys, likes a girl but has to come good and to impress her.
Well, he is... Jason Alexander is one of the nicest people I've met. He is an absolute delight.
You don't get that from Seinfeld.
Well, you just... Well, yeah, you can't begrudge somebody that successful for being such a great person. You can't, but yeah. Their success is like, he deserves everything. He's such a great guy. And I had the privilege of working with him a year and a half ago. We did four shows down in Melbourne. And
yep.
The producer of the show wanted an impro part in the show.
Because he's done a bit of improv. I saw him do Thank God You're Here.
Yes, which he was just about to go and film the first time we worked together. And just lovely man. And we just clicked on stage. And there was just a really nice rapport. So I got the chance to work with him again this year. Mm-hmm. And because I kind of figured out what the show was a bit better, I knew how to slot the improv thing into it.
Yep.
And we would do a newscast at the end where he and I were the co-anchors, and I would ask for a relationship between us. And of course, inevitably, it was, you know, sexual, you know, or going through a divorce. It was some kind of, you know, matters of the heart relationship we always got. And then the others in the show, we had Mick Malloy would do the sports report and he'd be given an animal. Russell Gilbert would be the eyewitness.
So has Mick done some improv? Some stages,
yeah. They all did stand up and we all then came together at the end. And did this big improv bit. And,
so it was like comedians coming to do
improv at the final scene of the night. So they all did their standalone, you know, 10, 20 minutes.
I can't believe I just referred to him as Mick. Like, he's my old friend Mick. Oh, yeah, now I've watched all his videos. We're good friends.
Yeah. He's top bloke. And Kitty Flanagan was on there, and then it'd alternate between the Scared Little Guys and the Umbilical Brothers to do the weather. So it'd either be sung or it'd be physicalised, which is great fun. And Jason is just so much fun to play with. Like, he was always just being a bit naughty. Like, every now and then he'd just be a bit naughty. And I did manage throughout the tour for him to fill me up several times, and that's a story I just like to tell because I got filled up by George Costanza. In context, though, not out of context, because the relationship's in the scene. He was, you know, so he would. But then, by the same token, it was quite bizarre to be standing there and then to leave yourself and watch this such well-known face standing there with his hand on your boob
in his hand.
It was just that was quite bizarre. And someone apparently in Newcastle asked if we were related, which I thought was hilarious. He told me, he said, someone thinks we're related. And he said, I think we've got that relationship thing going on. So every night he would introduce
me as... That would have made the boob in the hand
thing
a little bit
weird.
Strange,
that's why I thought it was odd. So every night he would introduce me as his sister from another mister, which I thought was kind of cool.
Nice.
So that was my, yeah. So that was really good fun. Just that image of him being just standing there. Holding my boob. No, not too many people, I think, can say that. I don't know. Yeah.
I can, but, people up from a long way away. And time. You have been listening to Rebecca de Unamuno. You've been listening to Patty Styles. You've been listening to Liam Amor. And you've been listening to Stephen Youngblood. And you've been putting up with me, Dan Beeston. You can find out all these people's interesting websites from the different websites I've mentioned throughout. Do you have any web sites that you want to pimp?
Impro Australia. You can go to improaustralia.com.au.
Yep,
absolutely. And, that's all.
Yep, you don't have a personal
one? I don't have a personal one, though. I'm lazy.
Just a Facebook.
Just a Facebook, yes. That's all I am.
Like everyone else in the world.
Exactly.
My website is, of course, invisiblespiders.com. You know, there still isn't anything there, but there will be soon, I promise. For news about Impro in Brisbane, go to impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for End Time is jealously guarded by CivicNet Web Design. Well, it's the last part. Oh, jeez. Noisy mic does whatever it fucking likes. This is the last chapter. This is the last chapter. And a big greeting to Rebecca de Unamuno. De Unamuno. De Unamuno. De Unamuno. De Unamuno. De Unamuno. De Unamuno.